Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 project here on the Nerd Party, the podcast that takes you through the back catalogue of A24, two films at a time. I'm your co-host Dallas King, and with me as always is Lee Hutchison. How are you this week?
Yeah, really good, thank you.
Good, well, we normally kick things off on the episode with some A24-hour news where we discuss the latest gossip coming out of the company, but after the last episode's smorgasbord of info, we were kind of light on the ground this week. That should be said, until about 2 hours ago, because I was expecting there not to really be much news, given that it's just the start of the Cannes Film Festival, so I was expecting them to be saving any big announcements until sort of next week, once the festival's fully underway. But we did get, very kindly, because as we always say, you know, when we record these episodes, normally it's just after we finish recording, they go and drop something, and indeed, they, you know, they've dropped just in time for us the full trailer for Midsommar by Ari Aster, who famously made Hereditary last year and is one of our favourite films here on the A24 project. So, Lee, I'm going to hand it to you. What did you make of this sort of first full look at the film? We had a teaser about a month or so ago that gave off a heavy sort of Wicker Man vibe. What did you make of this?
Yeah, I think if we thought it was kind of had a Wicker Man vibe, it's been very much underlined with this trailer. I'm really excited for this one, and I think I've kind of watched it one time, and I watched it and I was getting a really good feel for it. And then sort of the second time I watched it just before the recording, and my kind of big takeaway from it is that I'm watching and thinking, yeah, I definitely think we're only maybe seeing sort of the first half of the movie. Perhaps kind of whereas sort of the Hereditary trailer had sort of some kind of clever imagery and timing, and so, you know, for example, we see the funeral scene in Hereditary with a person there that shouldn't be there, and I kind of get the impression with this trailer that they're very much kind of showing, hey, this is the early parts of the movie. Then they kind of get to this festival. Here's a little bit about what kind of goes on at the festival. And then we're going to kind of keep the rest of what's going to happen in sort of this drug-like haze that some of the characters it seems to be able to go on. So I'm really curious to see, you know, we've got this full-length trailer, but I feel like it's not shown much of its hand at all. And I'm really excited to see what this film is going to be and how it's going to kind of mess with my brain.
Yeah, no, I think this is definitely going down the sort of Avengers Endgame route of probably not showing us anything from the third act of the film. Maybe some sort of second act stuff. It depends how long it takes for these people to realise that everything at the festival is not as it may seem. But, I mean, you've got a better look at the sort of cast. You know, Florence Pugh looks fantastic as always. You've got sort of Jack... we've got Will Poulter in there as well. But I think the biggest takeaway for me for this one was actually the fact that Chidi from the Good Place is in this. And if, you know, if things go the way I think they're going to go, it probably looks like this festival takes place in the bad place, because I don't think it's going to end well for any of them. Slash and bottom. So, someone may get out, who knows? But a lot of people have sort of said, you know, have been taglining, you know, the trailer online is, you know, Ari Aster takes you on, you know, a look at, you know, a festival gone wrong. And I was thinking, wow, it's like, you know, I can't believe they've adapted the Fire Festival into a movie already. You know, that is the baseline now for, you know, a festival gone wrong. So it's going to be interesting to see just how far wrong a festival this could go. But yeah, the Wicker Man vibes are still clearly there, and I like the way that they don't give really too much away about what this festival is, I mean, and what it's for and stuff. It basically, like, it's in Sweden. Clearly they're not going for a music festival, you know. It's clearly something odd is going on, but, you know, that's kind of, I love that kind of sort of ambiguous aura where you don't exactly know what's going on, and you're kind of in the same position as the main characters, where, you know, you don't know anything as well. So I'm very keen to see what this happened. Now, I think is it the 3rd of July? It's got a confirmed release date. I'm not sure if that's worldwide or just in the US and whatever, but it's releasing around the same time as Spider-Man Far From Home. So a good bit of counter-programming there from A24. And who knows, this could be
their... God, I never thought about that, actually.
Yeah, so this could be their big summer blockbuster, you know, for people who have got Marvel fatigue syndrome. Midsummer is your way to go. There was another trailer that came out just after the last episode, and that was for The Farewell, And you know, what did you make of that one? Did you?
Yeah, I'm really excited for this one as well. And Sean Eastridge, who is part of the Nerd Party, he covered the Atlanta Film Festival and had the chance to interview the writer and director about this kind of film. We featured that on our last episode, and this is one that seems really up my street. I love sort of family comedies where it's a bit of a farce and things, you know, people are lying about certain things and we all kind of go on a bit of a merry-go-round, and I think this one is going to be a really interesting film. I think I've got kind of hopes that this one's going to be at the Edinburgh Film Festival when they announce their programming in a few weeks' time. I think this one's going to be one that I think is going to hit quite the sweet spot. It's going to be very different to say something like Midsommar, but I think they're both going to be excellent movies. I'm really excited.
Yeah, no, I wasn't too familiar with the plot. I kind of had an outline of the plot, but I wasn't really sure how it's going to go. And I thought the trailer actually made it look more dramatic than I was expecting. I don't know why. I was expecting like a slightly sort of offbeat comedy. Maybe it's because sort of Awkwafina's been in the likes of Ocean's 8 and also Crazy Rich Asians as well. So maybe that's why I was just presuming that. But it clearly looks a lot more serious. So I think it's going to walk a very fine line, but I think clearly from what we've heard from everyone so far, it seems to get the balancing act just right. So yeah, very much looking forward to that one. And one final bit of A24 news is that for A24 fans in the UK, the A24 shop is now shipping to the UK. Found this out almost sort of accidentally online. They didn't make a big song and dance about it. It was basically someone complaining that they didn't ship to the UK, and then they replied on Twitter saying that they do. But of course I found this out in not enough time in order to place an order for one of their new salmon coloured hats. So I was hoping to get that for the festival. Sadly it's not. So A24, if you're listening, I continue to plead for items, but now that you do shipping, could you please restock the First Reformed hat and also your new spring hat as well? So yeah. And the candles, of course. You never sent us the candles, so you can now ship them to the UK to us, so that's fine.
I think this news was kind of given a bit, even with a single tweet, I think A24 gave more attention to the store shipping to the UK than Under the Silver Lake it got in an American release.
Ooh, sick burn. But, you know, that moves us on to the main films of the day, and these ones are ones that got certainly limited releases, but clearly quite wider releases than Under the Silver Lake got. And the first film we're looking at today is Krisha. And Krisha is the feature debut of Trey Edward Schultz, who people may recognise as the director of It Comes at Night from 2017, which will feature on a future episode. And Trey, this was a feature debut at which he wrote, directed, produced, edited, and starred in. Basic plot is that tensions rise on a Thanksgiving gathering where a troubled woman reunites with the extended family which she abandoned years earlier. Sounds like any Thanksgiving, to be honest, really. Stars Krisha Fairchild as Krisha, and this is Trey's own aunt, and it's based on a short film by the same name. Won the Grand Jury and Audience Awards at the 2015 South by Southwest Festival, and also appeared at the Director's Fortnight in Cannes. Received a limited release in 2016, and I think I'm probably fair to say a fairly limited release in the UK, because it's not a film which I was au fait with before this podcast, and it's certainly not one that I ever remember seeing at my local independent cinema or really anywhere in the UK. So, Lee, was it a similar case for yourself? Is this the first time that you'd seen Krisha or even heard of it? And what were your first sort of initial thoughts on Fortunate?
Kind of for today's episode, movies, I'd never sort of heard of them or seen them. These are ones I sort of had in the back of my mind. I was kind of looking forward to with some of the talent involved. And I'd seen It Come at Night. I didn't think it was the greatest, but I thought it was interesting nonetheless. So I was really looking forward to this one. And the fact that both of them were on Amazon Prime was quite a positive as well. Because sometimes with these movies, it's a bit of a struggle to find them and to be able to see them. But, you know, two in a row here for one episode was a pleasing sight. With this one, I got off to a really positive start with it. I kind of looked at it and I thought, like, this is 82 minutes. That is a really good sweet spot for watching a movie like this, taking some notes, and then going on to do a podcast about it. It's not going to cut into my complete week. But kind of with this film, I was really into it at the beginning. It reminded me, in a way, of something like Punch Drunk Love, where I was watching it, and sort of the music and tone reminded me of sort of the when Adam Sandler goes to his family dinner, and it's just got that uncomfortable tension. The music's ramping things up. There's overlap conversations. It all feels very natural. And as you kind of joked earlier, it's probably how most people can experience a Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner, or what have you, for people in the UK. And I was really into sort of this awkward tension. Oh, what's kind of the why is Krisha such a black sheep of the family? But it was just one of those ones that kind of ran out of steam quite quickly. It just wasn't able to keep up that tension and engagement. And while I thought the performances were good, especially Krisha Fairchild, who I was stunned to find out has barely been in any sort of films at all. You know, this is it's one of her few ones. I thought she was excellent in it, but it was just a film that just didn't kind of keep it up long enough to keep me sustained.
Okay, you know, because you know when I started watching it, the film starts with a close up of her face, and like you say, one of the huge positives of this for my film was the soundtrack. I thought it was fantastic. It's not your traditional score. It's really sort of discordant noise, and at the first I thought I was watching was like, is this going to be a horror film? And then I was like, no, I'm pretty sure it was classified as a drama slash comedy. But just the initial sort of zooming in on her face with the music that was playing was quite sort of unsettling and off-putting. And then, like you say, there's these sort of tracks that play in the background that just sort of gradually sort of increase in level and the sort of almost this bass hum, and it's like you can feel the tension is building, it's rising to something. It sort of reminded me of sort of very possibly referring to a scene, you know, at the end of the Godfather, where there's, you know, Michael's trying to decide, you know, if he's going to commit this murder, and there's this train slowly approaching. You can hear it in the background as the train sort of gets closer, or any time that, you know, there's ever a scene with tension that you need to create, and basically someone is boiling a kettle in the background as it gets louder and louder, and then there's this release. And I think, yeah, there was, you know, it's building for that for like the first sort of half of the film, and you're almost sort of wanting to get into the nitty-gritty, into the meat on the bones of why did she leave? Why is she coming back now? What was the reason for her leaving in the first place? Why, you know, what's the fallout of this, and why are people still, and, you know, why did they eventually invite her back? And, you know, you see that it's building to something, you know, and, you know, it's almost a case of, was it Chekhov's turkey? You show a turkey in the first 10 minutes, you just know that something's going to happen with the turkey. And yeah, the thing that sort of kicks everything off is her dropping the turkey out of the oven onto the floor with the gravy spilling everywhere, like gallons of blood or something. It was quite disturbing to watch. But do you think it was an intentional thing on her, or do you think it was merely an accident? What do you think of the pivotal turning point?
I think it was an accident, but whether you can say it's an accident when you go start popping like alcohol, prescription drugs, illegal drugs as well, all in kind of one go, I think you can have an accident, but one could say you're quite incompetent in setting yourself up for a huge fall with a behaviour like that.
Yeah, no, it was. That's when the sort of the tensions, sort of the polite smiles and the sort of they start to fade away, and people start to reveal their true feelings in there. That's why I sort of said it's basically any sort of family gathering where, you know, you're all sort of together for an extended period of time. There's always secrets and lies and stuff underneath the surface. You know, something happened years ago, but somebody isn't willing to let it go. And everyone in the family is almost just kind of waiting for that moment for it to rear its ugly head. You could almost like do a Deadpool or something with basically people putting $10 in and sort of finding, you know, what time is it going to all kick off and who's going to be the person that sets it off and stuff like that. And, you know, there was this, the end sort of sequences where she has this, I wouldn't say a fall from grace, because clearly I don't think she's ever had a lot of grace in her life, sadly, but, you know, it all starts to go wrong, and there's this huge sort of shouting match and over the dinner table and stuff. And sort of, I'd not known anything about this film before going. It's only reading afterwards that you realise that a lot of the sort of cast members were Trey's own family, and that the film was apparently based on something which happened to a family member that actually, you know, takes you almost start to look at it in a different light. And it must have been incredibly sort of difficult for them to to almost sort of recreate these things that have happened to them in the past and stuff like that.
Yeah, so with the kind of other characters, did you feel they were sort of, there was any sort of development to them at all? Like, obviously, Krisha is the titular role and, you know, she demands all her attention, but I kind of felt a lot of sort of, as it builds up to sort of this big family meltdown around the dinner table, and I just sort of didn't know too much about these other characters or didn't have much interest in them. I felt like, you know, maybe an extra bit of time could have been used to sort of focus on those characters and sort of make it more of a kind of impact, because I sort of felt that when it gets to that moment where it all just kind of falls apart, like, we're expecting it to happen, but we don't really know much about sort of any of the characters involved or, you know, what's brought it all kind of to the table. And I just sort of felt like it kind of limped over the finish line, where I felt like if we had known a bit more about these characters, got to sort of get in their heads a little more, I think it could have been a really good climax.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. I think, yeah, when you sort of look back on the film, the majority of the film is from sort of Krisha's perspective. So any interactions she has with the family are always through her. I think there's maybe one or two scenes where she's not involved. So therefore it's very, like I say, it's very difficult to get to know the rest of the family and, you know, what they are making of Krisha's return. Because clearly, I think it's her son. She's clearly sort of, it sounds like she walked out on her son and he's had to be raised by her sister. And, you know, he clearly doesn't want her back. And there's the sister's husband who is always sort of there trying to take sort of pot shots and stuff like that at her and little digs, and is almost sort of, you know, trying to make her sort of pop or explode and for the truth to come out finally. Yeah, no, I can see that. It would have been better to get a bit more sort of backstory on what sort of happened. I mean, sometimes, yeah, there are films that work very well when you don't have that backstory and you've got that ambiguous thing and it's left to you to kind of fill in the blanks. But here, I think, yeah, for it to really sort of nail the landing of the sort of final 5-10 minutes, you really probably needed to have a bit more emotional investment in the other characters and just how it's affected them and stuff to truly work. And what did you make of the final ending, you know, just sort of going to sort of spoiler territory, what did you think happened to her? Did you think there was a potential sort of drinking drug overdose and that certain things were maybe sort of playing out leading up to that moment? Or was that just my reading of the film?
I kind of think it's going to be a cycle that I wouldn't be surprised if there's a, you know, in an alternate reality, there's a Krisha 2, Krisha 3, where they sort of, you know, with people that abuse alcohol and drugs, that it can often be a cycle, and you know that, you know, she kicks off against Robin and then she's removed, and you know, I can just sort of see this image of like her trying again that following Thanksgiving or a birthday or something like that, kind of dropping in on an event and, you know, a repeat of that kind of cycle. That's kind of maybe where I saw it going. So yeah, maybe that's a negative thought about where Krisha's going as yours.
Yeah, no, I think there was a point where she says, like, something along the lines of, the sister says, you always do this, you know, it was like this, I thought this time you had it sorted and stuff like that. So clearly, you know, maybe she's had relapses in the past and this was going to be like the one final attempt, you know, because she said, I believed you this time and stuff. And like you say, yeah, she sort of comes down and has a fight at the dinner table and then is taken back upstairs, but then comes back down again. So yeah, like the sort of cycle that's doomed to repeat itself until the end. So, but I mean, what did you think of the cinematography and the filmmaking style of it? Because it did seem sort of quite claustrophobic and sort of keeping you right in the middle of the action and stuff like that.
I did enjoy that. I think that's the best way to do something like this. It feels like a very mumblecore movie, and I think kind of being thrown you into the middle of that action, that, you know, you're following these characters from room to room, I think it keeps up the energy and the intensity of the film. That I think if this played out in sort of wide shots of people around the dinner table or kind of in one room, you know, film maybe like, say, a traditional Frasier or Friends or something like that, I think that would have taken away. I think the cinematography and the camera movement certainly complements Krisha's mental state and sort of the unfolding madness of her kind of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really like the the way it was shot and how it sort of put you in the action and sort of with her and stuff like that. And I mean, I'm a lot more positive, I think, on It Comes at Night. I think it was actually just outside my top 10 in 2017. I thought it was one of the best sort of horror films of the year, and it is a horror film. There's none of this elevated sort of horror, you know. It does have like a family drama element at the middle of it, but I would definitely classify that one as a horror film. But it's definitely shown enough sort of promise here and with that one that I'm interested to see what he does next. And I expect whatever he does, it'll probably be under the banner of A24, you think?
Yeah, I would hope so. I think, you know, we see some of these actors and directors come back for two or three films in a row, and I think he could certainly be another one of them.
Absolutely. So from that film, we're heading on to film two of the day, and that is True Deception. Well, I say True Deception here in the UK. I believe in America, the film is called The Adderall Diaries, and it is based on the true crime memoir by Stephen Elliott. And the film is written and directed by Pamela Romanowski and stars James Franco, Amber Heard, Christian Slater and Ed Harris, plus a young Timothy Chalamet as playing the younger version of James Franco's character. So writer and Adderall enthusiast Stephen Elliott reaches breaking point when his estranged father resurfaces, threatening his newfound life and success that was born out of his troubled childhood memories. Adrift in writer's block, Stephen is kept going by three sources of inspiration: a new romance, the best friend who shares his history, and a murder trial that reminds him much more of his own story than perhaps it would appear. So, Lee, I think, is this another one which you are a newcomer to? What did you make of True Deception?
Yeah, this was one on paper I was really quite keen to see. That I enjoy James Franco as an actor, and you know, I think when you sort of look ahead at some of these films that you've not heard, sometimes you have a wee nosy on IMDb and you see something like James Franco, Timothy Chalamet, Ed Harris, Amber Heard, Christian Slater, Cynthia Nixon. You think that's a pretty interesting cast. I wonder what this one's going to be about. And kind of as I sat down to watch the film the other day, I just thought it was potentially one of the worst ones that we've kind of covered so far on this film and this journey. And I know I didn't realise until sort of at the end of the film that it was based on sort of a true crime memoir, that the writer of that film, and who James Franco's character is very much based on, Stephen Elliott, disowned the film. And I can see why. I just thought I was kind of sitting there watching on my Amazon Prime, you know, I think like 6 o'clock on a Monday night, but I felt like I could be watching sort of daytime TV, you know, those kind of, I can't remember the name of the channels, but you know, the type, the hokey, you know, true crime dramas that are on in the afternoons that you can imagine bored housewives kind of tuning into. This just felt like really disappointing. And the only thing that would make me think it had any sort of quality was maybe perhaps the appearance of James Franco sort of in a bit of a peak of his career. It just felt like, yeah, it was awful. That I think it had different things. It was competing, you know, different storylines that just didn't work well together. You know, you have this crime element with kind of Christian Slater's character, you have the family stuff going on with James Franco and Ed Harris's character, then you have this weird sex kink relationship between James Franco and Amber Heard, and it was just like, it just felt like none of it was ever that really good, and it just mushed together in a really bad way. I just didn't like this one at all.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that if you're watching these kind of films on daytime TV, you're going to have to let me know what channel you're watching, because this was, and like you say, quite full on in terms of kinky sex and stuff like that, with James Franco asking people to choke him out and to rip, you know, clothes pegs off his body and stuff like that. And the thing was that with stuff like that, I felt that there wasn't enough build up to his character as to why, you know, it's explained, you know, that he believes that he was, you know, physically and emotionally abused by his father, but it doesn't really explain the sort of sexual perversions which are, the film tries to link to his past and growing up, that clearly this is why he's like into it. It's like, is it wanting to cause pain and stuff like that? So, but it never really goes into enough detail as to why he is doing these things. And yeah, for me, this was a bad film. I mean, I think I saw the trailer in advance of watching the film, and the trailer made it look okay. I was thinking, oh, okay, you know, this could be quite interesting. But yeah, I think I was just completely bored by this. I think James Franco is I'm really sort of blow hot and cold on Franco. Sometimes, you know, you get something like, you know, Alien in Spring Breakers, or, you know, his performance as Tommy Wiseau in The Disaster Artist. But there's other times where I find him really sort of bland and just unengaging. Like the Spider-Man films, for example, I think is on where it's just like, I can't seem to connect with him. Amber Heard, I'm not sold on either. You know, Ed Harris, I thought, was actually very good. I think Ed Harris is someone who can bring quality to the smallest roles, and I thought he was great in it. But there was just, yeah, something really sort of, I think you say, like you say, it was like, the film's sort of getting pulled in all these different directions, and if maybe it stayed, you know, in one particular lane, it could have been a success. I mean, I think you could have pretty much jettisoned that whole Christian Slater story. I mean, if it is indeed, you know, sort of based on this guy's memoir, and it sort of hinted at the end that basically upon learning the verdict, he basically went back and, you know, he's got this thing where he's written a book about his father, about how he's abused by his father, and it's become a bestseller, and he's about to be starting to write another book, but then his dad, who he'd claimed was dead, turns up at a book reading, and basically he's threatened with sort of losing everything he's built up so far. And then, you know, once he's lost this, he decides to reconnect with his dad when he realizes that maybe, you know, memory can be, it's all down to the eyeball, and maybe he's not remembering things just as the way it was. And then he writes another book about how he's reconnecting with his dad and stuff like that. And it's basically, it's got very little to do with the Christian Slater plot of this guy who apparently murdered his wife, but is not pleading guilty to that, even though everyone thinks he is guilty. And he keeps talking about memories and how, you know, people aren't what they think they are. And it's, if that's the point where this writer and this character decides, gets the fact that actually I shouldn't be writing about this, I should actually be thinking about my own family and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, you could have done that anyway without that. It's so, yeah, it's, this one was just, yeah, I just find it too dull and too, it seemed to be like going for like some sort of hard-hitting sort of erotic thriller that you could sometimes get like in the late 80s, early 90s. And then, like you say, it's trying to be a true crime sort of film, and then it's trying to be this family drama. And yeah, it just pick a lane and stick to it. And you might have had one really good film in there rather than sort of three terrible films sort of mashed together.
Yeah, just one of these ones that seems a pretty poor movie all around. It'd be interesting to read the book and how that one compares, but yeah, it just seemed like not the best film for those people involved, though I'm sure James Franco will find redemption within A24 soon enough.
I think he will, yes. He's got a better performance coming up in a bit, but I mean, I can understand why the UK have renamed it True Deception. I mean, because Adderall, I think, is pretty much an American drug, and therefore it probably would have been quite confusing. But I mean, if it is called The Adderall Diaries, I mean, it really should have been called like The Adderall, Coke, Heroin, MDMA, Ecstasy Diaries, because I mean, there's a lot of drug taking in this. He doesn't seem to stick to one particular drug. He likes to sort of get anything, sort of sample everything in this sort of downward spiral, sort of self-destruction that he seems to be going on. So yeah, so not one that we're going to recommend on the A24 project. If you're sort of, if you're wanting to be a completist, absolutely do check it out. But if you're going on our recommendations, then this is probably one to skip, I think. But I think we probably, it's safe to say that we're going to have two very high recommendations next week, because we're going to be looking at Green Room and The Lobster. Are you looking forward to that episode a bit better, Lee?
Absolutely, I'm really buzzing for this one. I think it's going to be two exciting movies to talk about in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, two very different films, but two excellent films, and the return of the discussion on Nazi dogs. So that's always good to look forward to. and then also other dogs in The Lobsters, but of course we cannot confirm or deny whether or not those dogs have any Nazi and sort of far-right tendencies. But I guess we'll see next week. So until then, cheers. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.